Tech of Sports, episode 21 for August 8, 2012. Team Phenom. This week on the Tech of Sports, Charlotte and Antonia Newman from Team Phenom. Just want to let you know that Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There is an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices and Android. Stitcher Radio. It's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight to episode 21 of the Tech of Sports, and appreciate you taking time away from watching the Olympics for a few minutes here. And we're going to talk a little Olympics and women's sports and startups, tech startup, starting a business in the tech space, and have it involve sports as well and the challenges involved in that. It's starting a business is kind of like a competition, and I've written an article kind of comparing to starting a business and how an athlete prepares for an event and a competition like the Olympics. And, you know, it's drive and hard work and lead to competition and to success. And we'll talk about that tonight with a tech startup called Team Phenom. And Charlotte and Antonia Newman have been gracious enough to join us tonight. Thanks for coming on, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. We're happy to join tonight.
Sure. And just want to let everyone know that a little about our two guests. Antonia has over 5 years of sports management experience, and she's worked in basketball development with the Atlanta Hawks NBA franchise and in marketing with the Atlanta Hawks and former Atlanta hockey team here in Atlanta, the Thrashers. She's an athlete as well. She was a two-time All-American basketball player at Florida Southern, and she played professionally in Europe. And Charlotte is the tech brains behind the operation, and she has a bachelor's degree from Wellesley College, and she graduated from the Harvard Business School. She currently sits on the board of the Harvard Business School Club of Atlanta, and she's passionate about sports. She's a runner and just a huge sports fan in general. She formerly played basketball and ran track. How does that sound, you guys? You seem to be qualified to be involved in a sports startup.
Yeah, thank you. Sounds good. I think you know pretty much covered it.
Yeah. Have you guys been watching a lot of the Olympics so far? We'll start out with Charlotte there on the left.
Yes, I've been watching a lot of the Olympics. We've been covering it from day one. It's been very exciting. I think one of the things that's been particularly great about this Olympics is, I guess this has been declared the first social Olympics. So you watch it, you're following people on Twitter and on Facebook. So it's been great to follow the games, but also follow the reaction of all the fans here in the U.S. and all around the world.
Yeah, Antonia, have you been following it on multiple platforms, the TV, social media, internet, a little of everything?
Yeah, we've. We've done, you know, a little of everything, as you stated. As a sports media company, we certainly want to stay abreast of sports events as they're unfolding. We would love to, you know, wait on primetime TV with the majority of America, but we've been doing, you know, we've used quite a few different ways to cover the Olympics and watch the games.
And Charlotte, where do you stand on the big debate about whether the game should, everything should be live, or, you know, watching the results kind of in a best of format in prime time? Do you feel that that NBC has made the right decision with that, or are you more for having everything live and then, you know, giving you a little bit at night? I mean, they pay so much for the Olympics to have it, they can kind of do it their own way. But do you feel it's been good kind of the way they've been doing it?
I think it's clear that something has to be done differently. I think NBC faced a really unique challenge. They're the first network to cover the first social Olympics. So I think, you know, going forward, there are a lot of lessons to be learned. I would say I understand the motivation for trying to show everything or show so many of the events during the primetime block, but given that advertisers are increasingly moving to, wanting to advertise, whether it's on mobile or online, a lot of things are going digital. So I don't see how, I would imagine there has to be a way to provide people more coverage via television, via, you know, sort of older media, like as things are happening, while they're and still being able to recoup some of what they would have earned on traditional TV advertising via the web. I don't have a takeaway right now for how things should be done. I guess I would just to recap, I'd say that it's clear that something different has to be done. And I think that given where our advertising dollars are moving, there should be a happy medium between providing live coverage and, you know, via television and streaming via the web.
Yeah. And Antonio, you're kind of looking at it from a different perspective than the regular fan watching it on TV. You have kind of a vested interest in covering the games. And who knows what changes are going to come up in the next 4 years too. What do you feel about the primetime show being kind of, you know, heavily focused on just Americans and then being just kind of a best of events that already have taken place 5, 6, 7 hours ago?
Yeah, I think that I would like to see more coverage, not just on our athletes here in America, but on, you know, some of the other great athletes, you know, around the world, for sure. And of course, we're looking at it from a different perspective. But even, you know, for the fans, it would be great to see, you know, like more live coverage to be able to turn to NBC and not know the results, for example, of, you know, like a track event. So, for example, even for me, like on Sunday, I had a USTA tennis match and I'm scrolling on my phone. And before I get to watch, I already know that, you know, Bolt won the 100-meter race and Sonya Richards-Ross got her first gold in the 400. And that's awesome. But when you view it at night, you're not looking at it. You can't, you know, view it in the same way, you know, knowing the results. So, you know, as Charlotte stated, I definitely think that, you know, something different, you know, has to be done.
Yeah, and playing devil's advocate for what you just said, NBC would tell you we have 5,000 hours of live coverage online, where if you're a cable subscriber, you can go online and watch, you know, events that have never even been covered before, like kayaking and judo and archery. And I think NBC's done a good job exposing especially kids and younger people to other sports that they normally don't get to see on television during during the regular 12-month, you know, sports calendar. Is that kind of how you guys feel about it?
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think the exposure has been great, like you mentioned, to sports that aren't as popular here in the U.S. And even for the ones that we get excited about, you know, when the Olympics rolls around, like swimming and gymnastics, you know, it's great to, you know, see those athletes shine and become, you know, household names. So I agree, the exposure, and especially to kids, you know, seeing that there are other sports than, you know, basketball and football and so forth that they can, you know, get into and, you know, have a great experience, have fun, succeed at, you know, is awesome.
But I think providing an opportunity for fans to stream different events online is different from providing that same level of exposure via television. And I guess one of the learnings might be that while people want to follow along on social media, they tend to also still want to tune in at a certain time to see the games, to see the events. So there has to be some way to show more events as they're actually occurring and allow people to interact. Because, I mean, it's really a unique time. And I think I have, you know, friends who are working traditional jobs who find a way to watch the games while they're at work. So people tune in. It's just that if it's made available, people have been watching, I guess, streaming online while they're at work.
Yeah, the only other sport I kind of find comparable to it is NCAA March Madness, and when they have those 2 days of games all day, how you know, people will take off work or they'll put a screen on their computer with the games. And I think the NCAA and CBS, which covers that, have done a great job with you know, regionalizing the games, but then also making an app and, like you said, online and using other channels where if you're interested in a game that's maybe not, you know, you're in your region with two teams that aren't in your region, you can still get that game. And I think maybe the Olympics would maybe want to try to look. I don't know how they would do that because it's so many more events. Another thing that I think would be great is if you have DirecTV or you have cable during the NFL season, I'm a big fan of the Red Zone channel, and I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it shows all the whenever a team gets inside the 20-yard line, they'll cut to that game. Could you imagine if they, had a Red Zone channel for the Olympics? I guess call it the Gold Zone channel. Whenever an event was getting close to being done, or you know, or an American was running a race that mattered, they would immediately just cut between different sports to that channel. Can you imagine what you know, how popular a channel like that would be?
Sounds like a great idea.
I'm familiar with Red Zone. I think that that's a, that would be a great solution to what's been going on with the Olympics.
Let's talk about your guys' business here for a minute. And you kind of started, I mean, literally it took an idea and you know, made it into a business and a website. And I wrote an article a little over a month ago, and you guys were in the article about how forming and creating a startup company is kind of akin to being an Olympic athlete, and how you train and have to prepare for when your business or when your website actually comes live. Did you guys feel like you were in training for something, or do you still feel like you're in training?
Definitely. And, you know, we completely agree. You know, obviously, training at an Olympian's level requires a lot of hard work and, you know, discipline and sacrifice and the ability to overcome obstacles. And as an entrepreneur, we face some of those same challenges and we have some of those same qualities. And, you know, working on a startup, you know, isn't easy. I'm sure training as an Olympian isn't always easy, but it's, you know, certainly worth it. And, you know, as you mentioned, we don't, you know, just feel like we've gone through training. We're certainly, you know, still there. And we know that, you know, we read the other day that Bleacher Report was just acquired by Turner for approximately $200 million. So that's their, you know, gold medal podium moment. So when Team Phenom proves that women's sports is a viable business and when we make a huge impact on women's athletics, which, you know, something that we certainly want to do, then we'll have our podium moment as well. So, yeah, it's definitely, we feel like we're certainly training.
Yeah, and you're always learning stuff along the way. And I always felt if you can learn maybe, you know, one thing a day, that benefits you in the long run. And I guess when you start a website or a tech site, I've always been told you really have to have kind of a niche. You can't be everything to everybody. And your guys' niche is women's sports. And, you know, I cover women's sports and have attend women's sports all the time and talk to people in women's sports. And people in women's sports, even to this day, feel they kind of have a chip on their shoulder. They feel that they're always – they feel kind of like second-class citizens to the men. And I know that's part of your goal. You're trying to bring women's sports more to the forefront. But what if you look back, was it something – when you were younger, is it something more recent? What exactly was the exact moment or the inspiration for Team Phenom as a website?
Well, I think for me, not necessarily just one experience, but just, you know, competing in sports throughout the years. And you mentioned, you know, like basketball, but I also grew up competing in track and field and softball. I picked up tennis about 5 years ago. So sports has always been an integral part of my life. And I've always wanted to contribute, you know, in some capacity. So Charlotte and I, you know, Charlotte has her sports background as well. But we were both dissatisfied with sports coverage. So Team Phenom is the vehicle that we, you know, selected to make an impact on women's sports and women's sports media. And if I had to pick, oh, I'm sorry. What were you going to say,
Rick? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I had to pick a particular instance or situation, it would be when former Olympian and Pat Summitt's first All-American, Patricia Roberts, came and spoke at our high school, and she just discussed, you know, like everything, the role of sports in her life. And I knew then that I too wanted to, you know, make a big impact on women's athletics. I didn't exactly know, you know, what capacity at that time, but if I had to pick a particular moment, it would be that one.
And Charlotte, as kind of the person with the tech background, were you the person with a lot of the say in the design of the site and kind of how it was going to be organized? Was that kind of your doing or your responsibility?
We've both been pretty involved with, especially pre-launch. Then we both worked on a lot of the ideas behind, you know our content model and the design of the site. I would say not only is it just a tech understanding, but also just from a user experience and design standpoint. Antonia and I were pretty adamant about wanting a site that was very sort of clean, easy to navigate, We were familiar with sites that we felt were a bit cluttered, and it was hard to find information. So one of our goals was to bring not just a product for women's sports fans to the market, but to bring something that we felt was a high quality and provided sort of rich images and was a, you know, provided a great experience for users.
Since you guys were both athletes, is there one thing on the site maybe that you wanted on there with, you know, because you have a sports background that you kind of looked around maybe at other sports sites or other, you know, sites maybe you kind of got some inspiration or some ideas from, but is there something, because you guys do have a background in sports, that you felt you could add that would make your site different, Antonia?
I would say in terms of our sports background, maybe two things. One, we certainly want the site to be engaging. So in addition to, you know, fans being able to come on and interact with other fans, we also plan to connect them with, you know, professional athletes. And we've, you know, started doing that to an extent as well. And then I would say that as athletes, we certainly know what type of stories, you know, interest us. And of course, we are, you know, like we're certainly working to prove our assumptions. But I think, you know, our sports background has certainly helped in, you know, developing the site.
Yeah. I think part of what Antonia mentioned was connecting fans with athletes. And I think the way that we've done that so far is we've been thoughtful about who's contributed to our site and the types of stories that we've done. So when we launched, one of the first stories we had was an interview with Shamika Holoqua. And we've been able, given Antonia's sports background and the fact that we've competed in sports, we've been able to leverage relationships with athletes and to use those relationships to help connect fans of their fans with them via our site. And we think that that's something that we're bringing to the market that's unique.
Something else you guys bring that's unique, and I recently read an article where here in the United States, the two fastest growing segments of internet users are Black women and Hispanic women. And is that are you guys relying on that? You're two Black women, intelligent, former athletes. Is that another perspective, a unique perspective you guys kind of have, that you know, a big conglomerate with, you know, men in suits and or ex-jocks kind of look at things maybe a little different than you guys do?
Well, we haven't thought about things from that lens. We do think a lot about wanting to create a product that will resonate with women. One of the things that we're passionate about is not just providing more exposure to women's sports, but because we speak primarily to women, we're wanting to provide sports news in a way that's different from what's been done before. So we believe that women want to consume sports information in a way different from men. So we tend to not only provide stories about, you know, about a game or what happened, but we're really into, we try to focus a lot on storytelling and telling stories about the lives of athletes, like off the court. And we find that those stories are the ones that really seem to resonate with our readers. But I hadn't seen the numbers about Hispanic and Black women, but I do read often about women in general and how like sites like Pinterest are seeing, you know, huge growth numbers because women are going to the site, you know, repinning things. And so we thought a lot about that, wanting to not just speak to women, but we're well aware of the fact that women, in a lot of cases, are more than a majority of users of various, like, social networks and different sites. So, and we know that women often make the majority of purchasing decisions for households. So that's something that we've kept in mind as we've continued to build Team Phenom.
One other observation before we take the break. I know because I cover men's and women's sports, and I know when I cover women's sports or write an article about women's sports, editors want the article written a little differently. Women like you said, you're dead on with what you said. Women like hearing that backstory or a little human interest tidbit more than just the men. The men want to hear the numbers. What happened on fourth down? They just want to hear, as a matter of fact, what happened. The women, you have to kind of weave a story more into the piece. Is that you obviously have recognized that, and people find that's harder to do. It takes a little more talent to do that. Have you guys found that that out kind of that way, Antonia?
Yeah, we certainly agree. I think from the feedback and even the comments that you see on our site with our stories, that is what our audience, you know, prefers. And even as an athlete, like I played sports, but I still also like the story that goes along with it. And I think for our audience, you know, they find it interesting. It's inspiring. So we can, Charlotte and I both completely agree that stories that take that angle versus just a straight recaps of game stats is a better approach.
Yeah, I agree. And women do like hearing that little story or kind of turning it into a story, and that kind of makes the article. And when you're under word constraints, that kind of sometimes you have to figure out a way to do that. I know when you're just reporting, you can kind of, you know, fit it in with 350 to 500 words, no problem. But when you kind of have to weave that story in there, it takes a little more time and a little more doing. And this is great stuff, guys. Appreciate it. And just hold on here, and I'll do a quick little spot here for Amazon, and I'll bring you in at the end of it and ask for your opinion on something. And just want to let all the listeners here at Netcast Studio know that if you're doing any shopping on Amazon, school shopping, anything this fall, if you have a wedding that you're going to be attending, you can use the affiliate link here at netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And anything you buy on Amazon will help support Netcast Studio and all the great shows that are on there. And it's a good cause, and it's easy to do, and it's netcaststudio.com/Amazon. It really doesn't get any easier than that. And I always give one pick, you guys, for something that the listeners and viewers can buy on Amazon. And since we're talking women's sports, one of the biggest events in the last 20, 30 years in women's sports was them really taking Title IX seriously at the NCAA. And there's a great book. It's actually coming out, I believe, in about a week or so. It's called Getting in the Game, Title IX and the Women's Sports Revolution. And you guys would be great to have the author of that book do an interview for your site if you can get a hold of her. And she's making herself a little bit accessible before the launch of her book. And it's Deborah Brake. And she kind of, the book's a little legal. So it's not fluffy reading. It's not 50 Shades of Grey. It gets a little deep in the legal analysis of Title IX and kind of how it was kind of a failure at first. And now it's successful, and it's kind of lets people understand it a little better and understand kind of the law behind it. And now, ultimately now, how it's brought tremendous gains for female athletes, and raising the visibility and cultural acceptance of women's sports. It's really made women's sports what it is today. And I haven't read it yet. I was hoping to get an advanced copy of it. I haven't got it yet. It's kind of under lock and key, kind of what's going to be coming out with this book, but it's available for pre-order now on Amazon, and I would recommend it for women's sports fans or anyone that's interested in hearing about Title IX. And have you guys heard anything about that book at all?
I haven't heard of it yet, but we definitely, you know, plan to get a copy for sure. But no, I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope it's not too difficult to read. I'm not a lawyer, but I guess they really go into a lot of the legalese of Title IX. And, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting read, and I'm probably going to pick up a copy. If I don't get an advance copy, pick up a copy on my Kindle app and give it a try, because I'm really interested in that and how big Title IX has become. You guys are some of the beneficiaries of Title IX. So I'm sure that, that you're kind of, you know, interested to see a little of the backstory of Title IX.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It'd definitely be interesting to know more about what, you know, there's been a lot of focus on sort of the quote unquote, you know, father of Title IX and the sort of like earliest moment when the bill was introduced. It'd be interesting to fill in the gap. To really know sort of what happened between when that very short sort of piece of law became law and now and today when we're celebrating the 40th anniversary. Like, we know some things, but it'd be interesting to know how the law evolved, I guess, over the time period. So
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see kind of if they throw in the men's sport perspective with it as well, how some men's sports have had to cut back on scholarships or even eliminate men's programs altogether to get in line with Title IX. And I don't look at it as they got rid of the programs. I kind of look at it like they started enforcing the law or started enforcing Title IX. So they just kind of brought it up to speed, and it'll be interesting to see if the book covers that aspect of it.
Yeah, that would be interesting as well. Yeah.
Here's where you guys get a chance to plug your site and say anything else that you guys want to say about what potential viewers will be able to see on the site, anything new you have coming up in the future. Charlotte can speak first, and then we'll turn it over to her lovely sister.
Okay. Well, we're really excited about being only 2.5 months in with Team Phenom. One of the things that we think users would really love is not just the sports news coverage, but there are articles about fitness as well. There's some sportswear trends articles. So we think that it's really a great place to come to connect with athletes again, to read about your favorite athletes, but also to maybe fill in the gaps. You have a question about what running shoe to buy, or you know what might be great athletic wear, or you know what people are wearing these days. So. Definitely check us out, teamphenom.com.
Anything you want to add, Antonia?
To what Charlotte just stated, we primarily use user-generated content. So we're looking for bloggers, you know, all the time. Now there are over 40 writers that contribute. They're women sports enthusiasts as well as elite athletes. So if you're interested in blogging about women's sports and fitness, then please go to, as Charlotte stated, teamphenom.com. Right under contact, you'll see bloggers wanted. And sign up. We have a great team, and we would be grateful, you know, for more bloggers. And also, I'm sorry, Rick.
I was just gonna put a plug in for your Twitter account at Team Phenom on Twitter, and also, you guys are on Facebook, I assume, as well.
We're on Facebook as well, Team Phenom. And just so everyone knows, that's Team, and then F is in Frank, E, N is in Nancy, O, M is in Man, Team Phenom.
Yeah, Team Phenom, TEAMFENOM.com. And I advise everyone to give it a try and check it out. And, you know, new stuff on there all the time. One thing that I always like reading about, and a lot of other people as well, are kind of looking back on the pioneers of sports. And, you know, and if we're talking women's sports, some of the pioneers of women's sports. And you can go back a little more recently, and Billie Jean King, who really is responsible for a lot of what women have to be thankful for these days. And even if you're looking back further than that, a Babe Zaharias, who is really an interesting character if you ever read about her. And I'm just kind of wondering, as two younger members of, I don't know what generation we call you guys, Generation Y, or I don't know what
millennial.
What are you?
I'm a millennial.
A millennial. I never heard that one before. I lost track after Generation X. I just know that I'm generation old. So, you know, it doesn't matter after that point. But, you know, as two younger entrepreneurs, how much do you guys know, and other people your age, how much do you guys know about the pioneers of women's sports?
I think that people our age, us included, are, you know, very familiar with the pioneers. I find it, you know, very interesting, you know, to read, you know, their stories. And not just familiar, but appreciate everything that they've done for the sport. I mean, obviously, it's due to the hard work and the determination and the sacrifice and the, you know, perseverance that we've been able to realize the benefits of sports. And there's so many of them, but, you know, yeah, not to name all of them. But, for example, just for me, you know, having the opportunity to go to undergrad and graduate school, you know, completely, you know, free of charge, having the opportunity to play professional basketball in Europe and, you know, travel the world is certainly due, or those experiences are certainly due to, you know, pioneers paving the way. So,
and maybe one woman that's, you mentioned her before, a recent person who really did started getting notoriety has been Pat Summitt. And I've always contended she's the one female coach, I believe, that could have coached a men's college team or a men's professional team. Because I know, looking at her, I'm scared to death of her. So I don't know how those women players, and I mean, and she's that way on the court. But if you talk to her former players, She's been a mother and a role model to all of them. And, you know, she's had some recent health problems, unfortunate health problems. But, you know, Pat Summitt, I think, and she was also a great player. People forget that she was an Olympian and a great player before she became the greatest coach in women's basketball. And do you think someone like Pat Summitt has really gotten her due? And people really know what Pat Summitt means to women's sports and women's basketball?
I think that more and more, even in recent years, she's, you know, getting more of that due. I can't say that she's gotten, you know, like everything that she deserves. I don't think that. But I would hope that, you know, like people that are our age and younger, you know, understand the significance that she's had on athletics, not just women's basketball, but even, you know, women's sports in general. Like you said, I completely agree that I think she could most certainly, you know, like coach a men's team, a men's professional team, and be very successful at it. And when you look at not just her as a coach or as a former player, but even the graduation rate that she had at University of Tennessee, a 100% graduation rate is, you know, phenomenal. And as
phenomenal.
You mentioned former players, yeah, like Shamika Holzfall, mentioning how she was a mother figure. I mean, you can't ask for a better person than that, let alone, a better coach.
Yeah, and it's kind of a statement on our society. A lot of the players that played for Pat Summitt and a lot of the players in college in general, you know, they came from broken homes and maybe didn't have a mother or a father. So they kind of looked up Charlotte to that coach as a figure that they could learn from and as a mentor. And is that important, do you think, to women, any women that are entering college these days?
Certainly, I think that, and this would probably go for young women as well as young men entering school. I think that just that sort of time period in your life, and when you're taking, when you're moving from playing sports on the high school level to going to college, it's a different ball game. What's required of you both on the court and off the court is changing. So I think it's important for a coach to be able to, kind of shepherd kids from that, from sort of the high school arena into college and the higher expectations that are now set when you're competing on the collegiate level and also having to manage your studies up, you know, off the court.
Yeah, and I think, and we'll just mention her just for a second. I think all women owe some gratitude to Billie Jean King for for what she did, and she should be taught in school history classes. And, it'd be great. I think it would be great on your site if you kind of had a feature each month on one of the pioneers of women's sports, because you can kind of, and there's lots of, you know, lots you can look from Nancy Lopez, and I mean, the list goes on and on. And you learn from those people even to this day, don't you?
Yeah. We actually did a pitch recently where we introed it by talking about some of the women who, you know, whether it's, you know, Billie Jean King or Cheryl Miller, just women who preceded us across different sports. And I think that that's a great idea to possibly feature them on our site. I think Billie Jean King, she actually came up in a conversation too about someone made a comparison between what's happened with the WTA and the WNBA and wondered if the WNBA took a different route as WTA did, if they would be better off in the end or if they might end up better off, because you know, right now, women's tennis is probably, it might be the only sport where women are earning the same amount as men's players. And that being there now today in 2012, really, we all owe that to Billie Jean King. I think that there are lessons to learn from her, not just in sports, as you mentioned, from a historical standpoint, and maybe even from, for those who are interested in the business side of sports, just I think there's a lot that we can learn from her, from, you know, whether it's studying what she did with the WTA or, you know, Women's Sports Foundation. So
I agree. As good a tennis player as she was, she's almost as good or maybe even a better businesswoman than she is than she was a tennis player. So that's a great point you just made. Let's just talk about one aspect of starting a tech startup. And it's no secret, most people that are starting tech startups are geeky white guys with a tablet in one hand and a cell phone in the other. And, you know, they the only girls they see are the ones on TVs pretty much. So what kind of reaction do you guys get when you go into a meeting or you go to an event and a startup event and you're two black women going into to that event? What kind of are they wondering, are you there to serve the hors d'oeuvres or, you know, what are they saying?
Well, luckily, I think that so much has been, even though I think this the sort of for a long time there was sort of a stereotypical techie, and that stereotypical techie probably looked more like Mark Zuckerberg than like us. But I think that increasingly that's changing so much, and you have organizations like Women 2.0, which is based out in California, is doing a great job about getting stories out about female entrepreneurs. So I think that the more that, you know, not just Women 2.0, but some of the main sort of arbiters of information around technology, like, you know, TechCrunch or Mashable or All Things D, the more that those platforms put stories out about female entrepreneurs, and not just, you know, female entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs of, you know, all sort of, you know, women, but, you know, folks of color, just every different groups, that the perceptions about who chooses to become an entrepreneur will definitely change. And we think that it is changing. We haven't really run into any conversations where people have been surprised by to meet us or surprised by what we're doing, which is a great thing. And hopefully, the only thing I will say is that things tend to still be very regional. We're based in the Southeast, and we're from Atlanta and very happy to be based here. We have, you know, great sports teams, and, you know, Ted Turner built CNN in Atlanta. So we feel that, you know, if he can build CNN here, we can certainly build a women's sports media property. But I will say that if anything, that's a perception that might linger more so than the one that you mentioned, is that startups are either on the West Coast or they're in Silicon Alley in New York. Right. So we definitely have to, you know, talk to people about why it makes sense for us to be in Atlanta. And hopefully that will shift as time moves on as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just to add to what Charlotte stated, you know, when we go to the events, you know, of course, it is predominantly Caucasian males. However, of course, we want to see more women in technology. But I would say that given the fact that we do stand out, as long as we're sharp and we own the stage, for example, when we do our pitches, I think it works to our advantage. And lastly, I just want to say that we just graduated from the Startup Chicks Business Accelerator program, and it has been an invaluable experience. Like, the mentors are awesome. And of course, Rick, you know that we met you through one of our Startup Chicks mentors, Jackie Chu. So I would say that if there's any female that, you know, thinking about starting a tech company, or they already have a startup, or even a male or female that wants to support women in technology, to definitely check out startupchicks.net.
Yeah,
because those mentors have really been through the wars and the battles, so they have a lot of past experiences they can draw on. And you may not know this, by talking to some of the mentors, they actually learn as much from you guys as you learn from them. So input you give them is valuable as they move forward as well. So it's a win-win for everybody involved, and it's a great organization, and there's programs like that all over the country. And, you know, women really have that at their disposal now, something they didn't have in the past. And I know from recent conferences I've been at, there's been as many women or more women than men at them now. So companies have really started hiring women in tech positions. And I think it's a good thing for the companies and for the general public as well. And it's there's nothing but positives I find in it. So it's good to hear you guys say that as well. And as we're getting close to wrapping up here, I always end by asking a personal question. So brace yourself for the it's not too bad, but okay. We'll start with Charlotte as the tech person. I can just about imagine what she's going to say. But what's the one gadget or piece of technology that you can't live without?
My iPhone. I don't know if that's what you thought I'd say, but
yeah, you're in line with most of the other tech people.
Yeah, I recently broke it actually, and I had a BlackBerry for like a week, and I used to like live on a BlackBerry, but it's hard to go back once you have an iPhone. I'm addicted to apps, so I have most apps that you can possibly think of are probably on my phone. So it was tough living without it. I'm happy to have it back. So
hopefully when that phone broke, we hate to see that happen, but hopefully you took it to the eye hospital, which I know those people down there real well, and they do a great job fixing the phones right down there in Buckhead.
Yeah, I did take it to the hospital, and unfortunately, it did not come back. So
great. And yeah. Antonio, let's see if you're a little different than your sister there. What can't you live without?
In terms of tech, something tech related, definitely my computer. But when she was talking about the iPhone, I have to say that I'm Team Samsung Galaxy. I like the Android.
I have.
Okay, cool. Yep. In fact, I kind of went backwards. I went from an Android to a BlackBerry, but I'm back. After being back, it's kind of crazy that I ever left. But yeah.
Yeah, you hear that story a lot that people have ditched the BlackBerry and moved on to either an iPhone or an Android phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, the BlackBerry's kind of hurting, but that's another story for another time. And, you could go on and on all day about that.
Yeah.
Antonia, give the website another plug there. And Charlotte, you can talk about the social media accounts.
Okay. All right. So it's teamphenom.com. That's T-E-A-M, F as in Frank, E, N as in Nancy, O, M as in man. And definitely check us out on social media if you want to keep up with the latest on women's sports. We're on Twitter at Team Phenom. Again, that's at TEAMFENOM. We're also on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Team Phenom.
So is there going to be a big Lolo Jones feature in the coming days?
Definitely. We're probably going to do something. You know, you've probably seen all the news about her reaction this morning on the Today Show to the New York Times article and other media outlets, you know, discussing the extent to which she was in the media before the Olympics and whether that amount of exposure was deserved. So we've been talking to some of our writers about covering that angle. We think it's an interesting one.
Great. We'll look forward to that and really appreciate your guys' insight and having you guys on. Thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Yeah. It was great talking with you. Yeah. Nice to meet both of you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure. Just hold on here for a second. That's Charlotte and Antonia from TeamPhenom.com, and you check them out, and you won't be sorry. And just want to let everyone know as we wrap up here, the Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you. And you can always head over to NetcastStudio.com and check out all the shows available, including another show that I help host. It's called Conversation Corner, where we tackle just a random topic each week, and we present both sides and debate it out. And it's a fun show to do. So check out the new and improved Conversation Corner as well. We are out of here, and if you're listening live, Waves of Tech will be coming up later. You have been listening to the Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.